This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
The last time anyone admits seeing Damien Hurd, he was lying on the floor of the wrestler's house in Gunnison, Colorado after a party. His friends thought he was going to sleep, but something made Damien leave the house that night and gave him a reason to pump gas at 1:30 in the morning. What happened to Damien Hurd, and who, if anyone, is responsible? From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd. Episode 3, Missing. I'm your host, Claire Santama. Thanks for listening. It's Sunday morning, and there's a light frost on the ground at Western State Colorado University. All is quiet on campus on March 30th, 2014. The wrestler's house on North Taylor Street is full of college students sleeping off last night's party. But one person is missing from the usual crowd of overnight house guests.
My impression was that he, for whatever reason, left our house when he normally would have slept there.
That's Courtney Birch, one of the roommates at the wrestler's house on North Taylor Street, talking to Gunnison Police Detective Chris Danos.
Is his car at your house when you got home at 1:30?
No.
The fact that he left your house, I'm getting the impression that's out of the ordinary.
That's not normal. That's definitely out of the ordinary, and definitely out of the ordinary that he didn't show up the next morning as well. I mean, Damien was always at our house.
For unknown reasons, Damien went back to his dorm parking lot, got in his car, and drove to a gas station. Surveillance footage captured the last known images of Damien's life as he filled his tank with $25 worth of gas at City Market Fuel Center in Gunnison, less than half a mile away from the wrestler's house on North Taylor Street. Then, Damien drove off into the night. Where he went next and why is an enduring mystery.
I'm very thankful that the video exists because it showed him pumping the gas. He was completely coherent. All of his motor skills were there. He didn't look inebriated in any way, shape, or form. He did not look like he was under the influence of anything. He looked like a normal, sober person pumping gas.
Damien's father, Gary, was trying everything he could think of to track down his son.
I had texted him, I had called him, I had emailed him, and even went as far as to send him a message on Facebook Messenger.
What did you think had happened when he wasn't getting back to you?
I had all kinds of things going through my mind, to be honest with you. At that moment, I didn't have any inclination that anything was amiss. I was thinking, okay, his phone's dead.
Whenever you would call his cell phone, what would be the result?
It would just go straight to voicemail.
Did he ever turn his phone off? Is that something like if he didn't want to be bothered or if he's sleeping, that he would put his phone on airplane mode or turn it off?
No, not that I'm aware of. He always had his phone on and generally always had it within reach.
Wrestling teammate Devin Zavala was one of the last people to see Damien on Saturday night. He shared his concern with Gunnison Police Detective Grace Cowan.
I even texted him Sunday morning.
But did he respond?
No.
And that's unusual for him?
In this case, it's definitely unusual.
What did you text him?
Oh, what's up?
Okay.
Killa, but yeah, that's his.
Okay.
It's just slang. I send him a Snapchat too, and he, like, when you send a Snapchat, you could tell that if it gets opened, but no opening.
And when did you send that?
Sunday, the same day.
And nobody's heard from him?
No, we've been looking for him, everything, nothing. Okay. It's just like he disappeared.
Gary Hurd also talked to Devin Zavala.
Do you remember what Devin said specifically about Saturday night, what he had seen or what he remembered about Damien?
Sure. Yeah, the first time I spoke with him, he told me that the last he seen Damien would have been 2 a.m. Sunday morning, and that Damien was asleep on the couch at the wrestler's house.
That's interesting, because I haven't seen him say that in any of his other statements.
In fact, Devin told Detective Cowan that the last time he saw Damien was 2 hours earlier, around midnight.
I left pretty early because I don't know, I get in trouble when I stay out that late, so I just leave.
What time did you leave?
I left around 12:30. Okay. And he was still there, sitting on the couch, charging his phone.
As the saying goes, nothing good happens after 2 a.m. But at the time Gary spoke to Devin, he believed Damien had spent Saturday night at the wrestler's house.
It seemed like a normal thing. He stayed there frequently. He actually had his own couch there that they basically deemed Damien's couch. I didn't think much about it other than, okay, well, Devin said that he was there at 2 a.m. on Sunday, so I at least know that he was there then.
Jessica De Aquila, Damien's friend and neighbor, told police she heard something similar about the timeline.
I remember I heard someone telling me that he was sleeping at like 2 in the morning. He was in the back, one of the back rooms, just on the floor sleeping. And then he got up and left. Like, they woke up in the morning, he wasn't there. And his car wasn't there.
Do you remember who told you he was back there sleeping?
I think it was just in one of the conversations we were with the boys, all the wrestlers.
Sunday came and went with no word from Damien. He was scheduled to work a shift at Palisades Restaurant, but never showed up. This is Damien's boss, the owner of Palisades Restaurant, Scott Frazier.
So we were kind of in our little social network trying to find him and track him down. The phone was just going straight to voicemail.
Scott is a well-known Western State alum and a former wrestler himself. He reached out to the team for answers.
And I think the rumor was that he left and went to Texas.
Damien's dad also spoke to his son's wrestling teammates in Colorado.
Of course, I was told that, yeah, we've seen him last night at the party. I think his phone's dead. I heard several different things.
Wrestler Andrew Morris also thought Damien could be laying low in Texas.
He got so bummed out he drove to Texas. That's what we were thinking in the house, because he weren't answering any of our phone calls.
Damien's father was growing more anxious by the day.
I didn't want to overreact. I didn't want to freak out. Damien was always really responsible about stuff. And I was weirded out that we didn't talk on Sunday and that I couldn't get a hold of him on Sunday, but not to the point where flags were going off everywhere. Midday Monday is when I really started getting concerned.
That was also the case for Damien's friend and neighbor, Jessica De Aquila.
I hadn't realized he'd gone missing till like Monday. Someone had said, like, have you seen Damien around? And then Tuesday was April Fool's Day, and someone said something about how, you know, he's been missing. And I was like, oh, the funny joke.
Jessica contacted Damien's friend and teammate, Zach Shank.
It was Zach who put a post on Facebook. He's like, hey, if anybody's seen or heard from Damien, we need to know. And they were like, Damien, if you're reading this, we're worried about you. And that was Tuesday. I called Zach and I was like, is this a joke? And he was like, it's not a joke. He's like, we're going to go out looking for him.
Tyler Gates, a member of the cross-country team, heard that Damien might have left town to avoid consequences of fighting with Anthony Rios.
The cops were looking for him, like, as if he got his car and just left, like, left town to avoid getting arrested.
The last two transactions on Damien's bank account were a $100 ATM cash withdrawal on Saturday and a $25 gas purchase with his debit card in the early morning hours of Sunday.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
It's a 13-hour drive from Gunnison, Colorado, to Damien's home in Azle, Texas. If he'd left around 2 a.m. on Sunday after getting gas and his phone was dead, he probably would have stopped along the way to sleep and charge it up. At the very least, he would have needed more fuel to make it all the way to Texas. He only purchased half a tank in Gunnison. But Monday came and went with no word from Damien.
By Monday night, I was settled with the fact that something happened. And steering with the weather that was up there at the time. I was feeling, okay, maybe his car went off the road and he's down in a big ravine somewhere. Nobody can see him. I'm thinking things like an automobile accident.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking anything like what ended up being his demise, but
right.
I got all these thoughts. All these thoughts were going through my head.
Gary didn't know it at the time, but there were signs of Damien on Monday in Gunnison. More specifically, signs of his vehicle.
We were at Subway, and we thought we saw his Saturn.
This is wrestler Travis Bradford.
When were you at Subway?
I think it was Monday. I'm not 100% sure.
You thought it was Monday?
I think so.
Travis told police that he was with his roommate, Colin McNally, when they spotted Damien's vehicle. Damien drove a black 2004 Saturn View, an SUV that was relatively unique. Saturn stopped making cars in 2009, so there weren't many of them on the road in general. And statements from Damien's friends indicated that they didn't know of anyone else on campus with that kind of car. Both Travis and his roommate told police they recognized the car speeding through town on Monday as Damien's SUV.
Did you see who was driving the car?
Yeah, as I say, we couldn't tell who it was driving. It went by real fast.
Okay.
Travis did notice one curious detail of Damien's SUV, the license plate.
And we saw the license plate was tilted a little, kind of crooked, like a screw was out.
This description of the license plate has always stood out to me as significant. If you're looking to avoid extra scrutiny from law enforcement, removing an out-of-state plate is certainly one way to do it, especially in Colorado, where it's something of a calling card. A lot of Texans vacation in Colorado, and there's a rivalry between the two states. The green mountain landscape on the standard Colorado plate is in stark contrast to the blue and red Texas plates that Damien had. Colin McNally also spoke to police about what he saw, but unfortunately, his interview wasn't recorded. According to the written report, Colin says he and Travis went to Subway between 5 and 6 p.m. on Monday, March 31st, after lifting weights. Colin also describes Damien's car as speeding out of town, and he notes the crooked license plate that appeared to be hanging by one screw. Gary didn't know about this sighting of his son's distinctive car on Monday evening, but considering Damien hadn't contacted him in over 2 days, he decided it was time to reach out to the university.
I talked to the school several times throughout Tuesday where they assured me that Damien had been in class, that he had signed in and out of class.
Western State had an electronic system to measure class attendance and cafeteria use. It relied on a student's ID card.
School told me that they had email confirmation from the professors that Damien was, in fact, in at least a couple of classes, Monday and Tuesday, and that his meal card had been used on school campus as well.
Gary says that wrestling captain Kyle Pyatt told him a similar story about Damien being spotted in class and in the campus cafeteria.
He had told me about a friend of his that came by his house and was giving him some information that Damien was in school, that he was in a class. And he was being really vague. I started pressing Kyle, what day was it, what time was it. He assured me that he would get the information that I was looking for.
According to police records, Kyle eventually provided the name Greg Graff as the student who saw Damien at the campus cafeteria, the Rare Air Cafe, between breakfast and lunch on Monday, March 31st, 2014.
Talked to Kyle Pyatt several times, and every time I would talk to Kyle, his story changed. And then he finally admitted to me that him and Damien had an altercation late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. I definitely started wondering if Kyle was telling me the truth.
Between the sightings of Damien's SUV, his ID card being used, and a student reportedly seeing him in the cafeteria, it would appear Damien wasn't missing at all, except for the fact that he still wasn't answering his phone.
It was going on all day Monday, and the majority of the day Tuesday.
I can imagine just that feeling as a parent where you cannot get a hold of your child. That must have just been totally maddening.
It was terrible and frustrating, you know, definitely frustrating. And I kind of went from being frustrated to being really scared.
Even though representatives from the wrestling team and the university had tried to reassure Gary that his son Damian was not missing, Gary couldn't let it go. And it's a good thing he didn't.
So the school was telling me that Damian's alive and well, that he's going to class, that he's having his lunch at school. Basically what the school was telling me is, hey, you know, when kids leave home, you know, the parents think they should have daily contact. The kids get out here, they get some independence, things get busy for them, and they don't contact the parents back as much as what the parents would like. So this is pretty par for course. Don't freak out over it. Don't worry about it. Damien's fine. He'll call you when he wants to. He's an adult. But I knew my son. I know Damien, and I know that he would never have went that long without contacting me back, especially after me going to the extreme that I went to try to get a hold of him.
On Tuesday, Gary made a missing persons report for his son with the Gunnison Police Department. Officer Josh Ash's first call was to wrestling captain Kyle Pyatt. According to the report, Kyle said Damian attended a party at the house Saturday night and left on foot sometime after midnight. Ash notes in his report that Kyle doesn't mention Damian's fight or the aftermath in their initial conversation. Officer Ash agreed to do a welfare check at Damian's dorm room. He arrived at 7 p.m. on April 1st and spoke with Damian's roommate, Lance Bradford. Their conversation was not recorded, but it still paints an eerie picture. Lance showed police all of Damian's stuff, which was untouched. Everything from his iPad to his toothbrush was still there. When Gunnison police officer Josh Ash returned from the dorm, he called Gary to report his findings. Then, according to the report, he asked Gary if there was any indication that Damian might be suicidal.
The police report asserted they asked if Damian could be suicidal when he was missing. Do you remember anything like that?
I do not. I do not remember ever being asked if he was suicidal.
By Wednesday morning, the mirage of Damian Hurd being alive and well was quickly disappearing.
Wednesday morning, I called Chris Lutengay back at the school and spoke with him again. He then advised me that he had made a mistake, that they do not have email confirmation that Damian had been in and out of class Monday and Tuesday, and that they did not have confirmation that his meal card had been used. So immediately when Chris tells me that, red flags are going up everywhere.
Chris Lukengay was the vice president of student affairs at Western State in 2014.
I understand that people make mistakes. We're all human. We all make mistakes. I'm not doubting that you made a mistake. My question is, what led you to make that mistake? What information was you looking at that led you to tell me that he was in and out of class Monday and Tuesday, and then he did swipe his meal card?
Could it be that the school was erasing Damian's digital footprint? And if so, why?
When they were questioned by me about it, they simply just said they made a mistake. When a local newspaper later asked them about the information they'd given me about Damian being in class and using his meal card, they simply just told the newspaper that they had made a mistake.
Gary would never get an answer to that question, and neither would the police or any journalists, including me. I asked the university for an interview and to explain their electronic tracking system in 2015, but was denied. The university issued a statement that said in part, "Subsequent fact-checking later determined that some of the early information was inaccurate, and we communicated that as we learned it."
They never said how the mistake was made, what information they were looking at that led them to make that mistake.
Because that's three different points that they're claiming to have data for that would say that Damian was physically in class and in the cafeteria.
The final police report on Damian's case is 187 pages long, and the disappearing ID card data netted only a one-paragraph description. It is stated that all three initial reports, including email confirmation from Damian's professors, were mistakes. It's worth noting that the university's information that Damien's ID card was used in the campus cafeteria at 11 a.m. on Monday, March 31st, corresponded with the time and date that Greg Graff allegedly told Kyle Pyatt he saw Damien in the cafeteria, between breakfast and lunch, on Monday. When questioned by police about his statement, Greg said he could no longer be sure of when he saw Damien. In my experience as a journalist, the old adage that the simplest explanation is usually the right explanation has held up. So the simplest explanation, in my mind, as to why Damien's ID card would have registered on the university system three separate times, is that someone was using it.
Damien's card was damaged, and it would not swipe. But he had to manually enter the code for the card when he used it, which is another thing that threw up a red flag to me, was that if that card was used, whoever used it would have had to have known the number to the card to be able to use it.
The same day the university told Gary that Damien was not, in fact, in class on Monday or Tuesday, police were looking into whether someone else was using Damien's ID card.
This is Detective Cowan. Time is 8:45 a.m. on the 2nd of April, 2014. I will be speaking with Devin. It goes by Bubba.
The following is from an early morning Wednesday interview at the Gunnison Police Department, hours before the university told Gary that they'd made a mistake about Damien's ID card being used.
Question I have for you, is it possible he would lend out his meal card to somebody?
See, that's what, like, people were telling me that people were swiping his meal card,
mm-hmm.
but that would be on his car keys, so no way. Just like they said he was in politics class, but if he was in politics class, Danny or Pyatt would have saw him, because they have politics with Damien.
And they didn't see him.
They didn't see him at all.
The fact is, if someone wanted to make it look like Damien was attending classes, they wouldn't even need his ID card to pull it off. But they would need to know Damien's schedule and his student identification number.
And his meal card was normally with his keys?
Yeah. And it's broke. I know it's broke.
Would he have been able to swipe
it? No, he doesn't swipe it. You have to go like this and say, put in the number. This is really out of the ordinary for Damien to do some stuff like this. At first we thought he was just being a little stubborn when it came to Monday, now today, mm-hmm. now. And if anything, he would have showed up to lab last night, because I have lab with him, but... Yeah, cop came in looking for Damien, too. But
is that for chemistry, too?
Yeah.
What time is that?
6 o'clock. Okay. Late night lab.
Chemistry is one of the classes where Damien's attendance was falsely recorded on Monday. As far as I can tell, the other class where Damien's attendance was falsely recorded was politics, which he shared with two wrestling teammates, Daniel Clark and Kyle Pyatt. In my mind, there are two possible reasons why someone would have wanted to make it look like Damien was attending classes and following his normal routine on Monday and Tuesday. In light of what we know about Damien's case, the sinister reason would be to make it look like Damien was still alive. But I also think there's an innocent reason, especially for college athletes, to fake a teammate's attendance in class. It could be as simple as trying to keep a friend who's already having a hard time from getting into any more trouble by skipping class. The use of Damien's card in the cafeteria is a bit harder to explain. It's not like coaches are checking to see if athletes are missing meals. Wrestler Andrew Morris told Detective Danos that Damien would sometimes disappear for a day or two after disputes with his teammates.
We've gotten in, like, arguments before with him.
Who's just we?
Like me in the house and stuff.
About what?
Just like little stuff. Maybe break something in the house or something, or drop something, and we'll like argue. And then he gets kind of bummed out, and he won't talk to us for like a day or so. And then he'll come back and like everything will be completely like as it was before.
Andrew says Damien's demeanor after arguing with Kyle Pyatt on Saturday night seemed similar to the way he'd acted in the past about disagreements with the wrestlers.
Kind of how he acted, like kind of bummed out, but nothing we haven't seen before.
Good.
Nothing to like give off any alarms or anything. Like when we woke up Sunday, like usually we figured like, oh, he's probably bummed out, that's why he's not talking to us. And then Monday came around and like everyone started calling and like worried about him, so we started calling him and didn't answer. And then we heard all those rumors about him like this card getting swiped and stuff like that.
No, I don't. I haven't heard that.
The meal card getting swiped.
Oh, his meal. I think yeah. His card getting swiped.
No, his meal card
okay.
getting swiped.
Okay.
After reviewing all the interviews and evidence, I found no indication that Gunnison police ever directly asked any of the wrestlers whether or not they had signed Damien into class or used his ID card in the cafeteria. The closest anyone came to the idea was when Detective Cowan asked Devin Zavala if Damien ever loaned his card out to friends. In the summer of 2020, I contacted wrestlers Kyle Pyatt, Zach Shank, and Devin Zavala for interviews on Damien's case. They all three declined my request to speak on the record. I did interview another teammate, Ryan Pello, who was the same year as Damien.
I mean, we met just because we were freshmen on the wrestling team. I'd say that he was definitely like a nice guy. And he was like more of a kind of a scrapper kind of guy, like wrestling wise.
Yeah, but that's definitely something I'm getting a sense of. I think scrappy is a term that has come up multiple times. Do you remember like student ID cards at Western, like what they looked like and how they worked?
I guess I still have my ID. I mean, you could just literally show in and walk in. Because you could also put in a number.
Exactly.
So you didn't have to actually have the actual card.
So what do you remember about the student ID number? Was it how many digits it was? Was it a long number, a short number? Do you remember anything about that?
No, I mean, I still have mine memorized, because it was also your login password for the computer. So every time you logged into the computer, you had to put in your student number. That's all you needed to know was those six numbers.
Okay. Six numbers.
Yeah.
Another question I had, just as, you know, freshmen athletes and being together all the time and everything else, I mean, was it normal to sign each other into classes? Is that something that you would do, like, as a favor? Like, hey, I'm going to be late or I'm missing this class. Can you sign me in? Is that something that you knew that happened?
I mean, I think I personally didn't know because I always showed up to class myself. I don't know.
You were a good one.
Yeah, I mean...
Ryan says he didn't personally have any knowledge of the practice, but he could certainly see it happening.
I don't think it's just strictly athletics either. I mean, if you have friends in the class, you can have them sign in for you. I don't know if it's... That doesn't seem like an absurd concept to me.
I told Ryan that no one has ever admitted to signing Damien into class, and there's never been an explanation for how and why Damien's ID card registered on the university system while he was missing.
But whether I know anything about it, I had no idea that people would, until you said I didn't know the university made those claims to his dad. I just knew his dad was kind of heated about stuff, and that was about it. I guess the reason is what I'm wondering is why. Well, I kind of look into it now in the first place.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. You know, so I'm a crime reporter. That's what I do. And I looked at this story when it was first coming out and when it was a unexplained death investigation. It was so strange and there were so many elements of it that didn't make sense. It just kind of sat in my file for a long time as a story. But I sort of kept coming back to it, wondering if there was a way to get answers.
One of those answers I'm still looking for? What happened to the clothes Damien was wearing at the party? Although the police's interest in Damien's disappearing digital trail lasted only a few hours, their interest in a missing physical item lasted much longer. Damien's blue coat. In images shared on social media from the party, Damien was seen wearing a blue coat, a baseball hat, and diamond stud earrings. In the beginning of the investigation, detectives were fixated on locating Damien's outerwear.
I was asking you guys about a blue coat, like a light blue coat. Does that ring a bell with you?
I definitely remember him wearing one.
Detectives asked the wrestlers about Damien's coat.
Have you guys seen that blue coat I was talking about, or that baseball cap?
We saw a blue coat in the corner, and we thought it was Damien's, but it ended up being one of our buddy's bins.
Over and over.
Didn't have a coat on, though.
No, he didn't have a coat.
I was asking you guys when I came over about that blue coat.
Yeah.
Now,
I didn't see him wearing that one.
And since Saturday, have you found any of his stuff in your room? Since he was hanging out and sleeping in there.
And over again.
So the blue coat's not in your room, or the hat's not in your room, or in the house?
I haven't seen anything.
Okay.
And then, as curiously as it began, the questioning about Damien's blue coat just stopped. This is Detective Danos talking to Zach Schenck 1 week after Damien went missing.
I'm not unable to tell you what happened to him, but
yeah,
do you have any other questions that I might be able to answer for you?
Could you tell me what like the blue coat has to do with anything? You might have told us the Pius, but...
Detective Danos no longer appeared interested in this piece of clothing that had, by all accounts, previously taken up a lot of his investigative energy.
I'm talking with tons of people that saw him, and
that's what they were saying?
I think it had to do with Snapchats or Instagrams or something like that. One of those pictures that disappeared quite a bit.
Yeah, the Snapchat.
Quick Snapchat. Yeah. People that saw him Snapchatting Saturday night saw him in blue coat. That's what I'm being told. And I don't know if that's people from around here or people from Texas. I can't really. I'd have to go back to my notes and look, but it was like somebody saw him in a blue coat.
In the gas station video, Damien was not wearing the blue coat. But the question remains, where is it? There were no search warrants executed on the wrestler's house at North Taylor Street or any of their vehicles. To this day, Damien's coat, hat, and the earrings he was photographed wearing the night he disappeared have never been found. The 4-day period when Damien is missing is full of contradictions. It's frustrating because while we actually do have a lot of information about what happened during those 4 days, we don't know why it happened. On the one hand, Damien's class attendance, ID card usage, sightings of his car speeding through town, and missing clothing and jewelry make a case for foul play and cover-up. But there's also the fact that the backdrop of Damien's disappearance is a party with fights, underage drinking, illegal drugs, and a bunch of college kids worried about getting in trouble. Taken in that context, I can start to see why Damien's friends are less than 100% truthful when the cops come calling. Still, it doesn't make the task of deciphering what happened to Damien any easier.
What do you think? Because I'm sure you're trying to make sense of it in your own head.
I can't make sense of it. That's a shitty part. I really can't, like...
Did anybody hurt Damien?
On the next episode of Final Days on Earth, the life and death of Damien Hurd. Police find Damien's body in a remote area of town, and the questions only get harder to answer.
I guess it's just the question of whether or not somebody would have hurt him is definitely an unsettling question, knowing that there's a chance that someone did hurt him. And I know you can't tell
if
me
somebody
that.
Hurt him, who do you think hurt him?
Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One and Live by Live. Each episode is written, reported, and produced by me, Claire Sanima. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Songs licensed from PremiumBeat.com are Bending Truth and A Thin Line. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of LucyMedia.com. Additional production help from Amber Robinson, Janice Sue, and Elise Weber. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanima. Special thanks to Gary Hurd, Scott Frazier, and Ryan Pello for talking to me in this episode. Tune in next week as we continue our search to understand what happened to Damien Hurd and who, if anyone, is responsible.